Bill Resnick leads off today's program talking with Larry Kleinman. Kleinman is the Director of National Initiatives with the Capaces Leadership Institute, or CLI, and co-founder of PACOON. They'll be discussing all things immigration, particularly concerning undocumented workers from south of the border and their fast-changing profile, the government shutdown, DACA's significance and impact on the larger issues, as well as last week's employer raids and the employer response. What does this all mean? Bill?
Larry Kleinman, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you, Bill. Great to be here again.
Larry Kleinman co-founded PACOON, Oregon's Farm Workers Union, and Educational Center, and Social Service Agency, and a radio station, KPCN, all headquartered in Woodburn. He served for 25 years as Secretary-Treasurer of PACOON. He also led the transition with others in PACOON to many young leaders and is still working with Jaime Arredondo, his successor. Larry now splits his time between Washington, D.C. and Woodburn and Oregon with a somewhat new mission, Larry, based on the changes in struggle. Tell us about what you're doing now.
So the short story of my trajectory, as you said, I work very locally, building the movement with other leaders in Woodburn, based in the immigrant community, the farmworker world. 5 years ago, I transitioned out of that leadership role, and I took a national role, taking that experience to help local coalitions and community-based immigration organization or immigrant-based organizations to build their capacity to serve many more folks in the anticipation that we might get a breakthrough and have a program that would offer legal status to millions of people. And at that point, 5 years ago, we were not at all prepared for such a tsunami that was both a tsunami of need, but a tsunami of opportunity. 5 years ago, when we thought we would win a breakthrough, when the immigration bill was moving through Congress, beginning of Obama's second term, when we were suddenly facing the possibility that there would be 8 million people who would suddenly be eligible. And the question was our movement writ large ready for such an influx and need?
Well, when immigration reform, real reform, decent reform seemed like a possibility.
It seemed like even a probability when the bill passed the Senate with 60-plus votes in June of 2013. My role there was to catalyze, along with others, a national coalition for preparation, and that meant capacity building. And it brought together lawyers and the legal community. It brought together community-based organizations and the DC/national groups. So that's what I've been doing in the main for the last 5 years. But at the beginning of this year, 2018, I have handed over that role that I played in my leadership role in the National Coalition. And I am focusing entirely on what I call organizational and leadership resilience. Because what I have seen very clearly across my colleagues in the immigrant rights movement is that there is a coming crisis of sustainability, meaning literally to stay in the work because of the toll that it's taking. The toll it's taking in the community with deportations up, fear up. The toll it's taking on them who are carrying the responsibility of how to respond to that, and the unpredictability that all of us are experiencing of the aggression of Trump. And now that is at an apex that, as we speak, the government is now shut down and over the primary issue of what to do about the Dreamers. So it's very clear that the movement has been revved up for the past year. It's been really living on adrenaline and done amazing things. But it's hard to imagine how we sustain that over the next 3 years, because that's what we're talking about. Trump isn't going anywhere unless he keels over. He's not going anywhere. I don't think he's going to be impeached. So we better be prepared to be resilient. And that means shifting how we carry our load. That is now the work I am engaged in fully.
Last week was one body blow after another, it seems to me, from the Trump administration. They have announced that they're going to destroy millions of people, many of them for certain deaths when they're returned to some of the countries like El Salvador and Honduras, our great friends down there, which are becoming murder states.
Because of our own complicity from decades ago.
But,
for example, they did the big show raids on the 7-Elevens, where they visited 100 locations, mostly in the East. It was really for show, Bill. This was not mass roundups. I mean, they took hundreds and hundreds of agents, went to 100 locations, and arrested 21 people. which is a pretty paltry number if your goal is arrest lots of people. But if that, of course, wasn't the goal. The goal was to send a message to both big corporate and small business America that they're serious about disruption. You never know who, you never know where. Just for your listeners' reference, this investigation of 7-Eleven started 4 years ago under the Obama administration. So this was not something they made up out of nothing. They simply ran with what they already had teed up.
They were also promoting E-Verify, right? And somehow they want to really give it a lot more energy.
They talk about deporting millions of people, but they know they don't have the capacity to do it. Everybody knows that, right? So what they're really about is Romney's old term of self-deportation. We're going to turn up the heat. We're going to turn up the heat via local police. We're going to turn up the heat on employers. And we're going to turn up the heat in other ways that force you to depart on your own. That's their whole agenda. Meanwhile, the backdrop of that is you are less assertive about your rights. You're willing to work for less. So it has benefits for big business and small business, right? But that's their whole agenda. And so in that strategy, flashy activities that rekindle the sense of fear are what it's all about.
You know, and the torture and some of these lack of medical care, isolating people in these many, many private prisons all over the country, I suppose that's part of the same strategy.
Absolutely.
Really terrify people.
You don't want to be in detention is the message. So what's the way within your own power to not ever be in detention? Leave. Which, even for the Salvadorans, so the second thing you were alluding to was the announcement that they're going to cancel temporary protected status for Salvadorans, 200,000 folks. Now, it doesn't take effect immediately. It takes effect in September, as a practical matter, September of 2019. What they're saying is one more extension, 18 months, and we're done. That's what they did with the Haitians.
Oh, I see. It gives them time to
pack their bags.
Pack their bags.
Right.
Or find some other country to go to.
Exactly.
Salvador is... The gangs are, these are people who have been targeted by the murder gangs, I suppose.
Some of them are, some of them aren't specifically targeted by them, but they will be when they get home. A lot of these folks are folks that they've had this status since 2001. Mm-hmm. So they've been here a long time. They may or may not have been home all this time. Probably not. So in a society as dysfunctional, violent, and predatory as El Salvador has become, they're sitting ducks, basically.
Sure.
And they know that.
And they may come with a few $1,000s, so why not just shake them down?
That's the assumption, right?
No, there's no question that that would happen.
What will those 200,000 people decide to do? A few will leave. A few will find another country. That's pretty hard to do. Actually, Canada's not going to take all that many. And most are going to go underground, like they were before. This is a wrenching shift, though, because they've had now 17 years of being able to live with permission. They've started businesses in many cases, gone to school, become credentialed, had families.
In lots of places like Woodburn and lots of places in Iowa and depopulated areas, they're now the strength of these, a lot of small towns.
Absolutely.
All over the country.
Maybe going back underground when you've had a permit for a year or two is one thing, but when it's become a way of life, basically, they've been the equivalent of permanent residents on a temporary basis because it seemed to be something that was going to continue indefinitely. Yeah. And suddenly, they pull the plug on it. Again, back to the point about insecurity and fear.
Larry, there's also this threat to sanctuary cities. They've amped up the threat. Is that a real threat?
Tangibly, no. Psychologically, yes. So this is the idea through enforcement action of exactly what Texas was trying to do through legislation, through what's called SB4, which is to target the officials and the localities that have declared themselves to be non-cooperating with ICE, except in limited ways or ways that the law requires. We don't know what that's really going to look like, Bill. It's sitting here today. What chances are what it'll mean is they'll send a squad of agents into a few localities. They'll arrest some folks that they were probably going to arrest anyway that they've targeted. They've got a list that they've targeted. Mostly are people that already have orders of removal. They have no due process rights as a practical matter. So that's why they're efficient targets for ICE. And they might even hassle or arrest a local official just to sort of rattle everybody's cage. That's what I think this so-called offensive on sanctuary cities is actually going to look like.
This is KBOO Radio, Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Larry Kleinman, who's one of the co-founders of PCUN, the Farm Workers Union, who's now working both in Oregon and particularly nationally to build a new kind of strength for the organizations that seek to advance immigrant rights of all kinds, and not just from south of the border. The last year of Trump has been brutal, as Larry pointed out, and Larry now is working with a large group of national organizations of all kinds to be able to deal with the new brutality and the anxiety in the community and amongst the people who are doing the work. And that includes churches and the tremendous church organizations, legal services, there's a tremendous number, and immigrant organizations, neighborhood organizations that are often confederated and part of a whole larger system. Larry, let's talk about the shutdown in government and DACA. In some ways, it's a triumph, actually. It raises the issue so much. In some ways, I think it's problematic in terms of it, the discourse that it's using of childhood innocence, but the parents are the problem. But tell us about the whole DACA movement.
So just for some context, the Dreamers movement has been around for 15 years plus. It actually started around tuition equity, as we remember, in the early 2000s. And in fact, in Oregon, it started as well, mostly aimed at getting in-state tuition for undocumented high school graduates to be able to go to a state college or state university without paying foreign student rates. It then morphed into legal status and then became part of the comprehensive immigration reform struggle, and still is to this day. We saw a huge moment in 2010 when there was an actual vote on the DREAM Act in the lame duck session, failed on a cloture vote in the Senate, but it's remained at the forefront. And it has energized tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of youth. And right now, after years and years of mobilization, there is wave after wave after wave of young folks who have come to the Capitol for the first time ever, some of them for the first time in Washington. For example, just this last week, there were 25 young folks from Oregon, and we had the leader of that delegation on the phone at Radio Movimiento at KPCN, and we asked him how many of them, of those 25, have never been to Washington before, and he said half. And I imagine that's also true across other organizations. This is the kind of politicizing moment and vehicle that you and I had, or I had, I'll just speak for myself, I had as a young person at the height of the Vietnam War, when it was our agency, it was our place, it was our call to step up and face the machine that was doing terrible things. In our case, the self-interest was being drafted into the military and going to Vietnam. In the case of the Dreamers, it's being deported, their parents being deported, their family members being deported, but obviously starting with them. Now, to your point about the discourse, which I think is right, but has always been with us, anytime we single out, for strategic reasons usually, a specific group of folks, we risk the playing into the narrative of the good immigrant in this case and the bad immigrant. The Dreamers are highly deserving. They grew up here and went to school with the children of U.S.-born Americans, right, et cetera.
They were brought here by their parents.
They were brought here with it wasn't
they're
their
just completely innocent.
That's right. Yeah. They had.
But the parents,
they had no agency in the matter, right? And so they are the good of the good. Let's just say, right? And so,
and they all speak English and going to graduate, having lawyers,
right? Yeah. Which of course is that's the good inside the good inside the good.
Yes, so
this is like one of those Russian doll constructs.
Immigrants, yes.
And I think they're not unaware of that, and very present in the discourse of Dreamers themselves always has been: we are fighting for ourselves, but we are fighting for our parents, we are fighting for our families, we are fighting for our communities, and that's why we were fighting for comprehensive immigration reform.
Right.
And there was a huge polemic years ago between what was called piecemeal, which is what we're dealing with now, meaning this group and that group sequentially, and comprehensive. But in any event, the pushback of the Trump, or the counter-revolution, really, of the Trump politics has forced the Dreamers into the breach, and the cancellation of DACA, which had granted work permits to 800,000 youth, it really brought them to the fore, whether they wanted that or not, or whether the larger movement wanted that or not. And the amazing thing, Bill, is that for years, there's always been huge support for the Dreamers, but it's been kind of shallow. meaning how much are you willing to support this? And now what we're seeing today is the government is shut down today because of the Dreamers. And the Democratic caucuses have held together. Six Democrats in the House only voted for that continuing resolution, the proposition being a four-week extension while the negotiations continued. And in the Senate, it was five that voted against it. In fact, a couple of months ago in the House, it was 18 or 20. So it's clear that the sharpening of those contradictions and the larger politics has actually unified the Democratic Party, not just in theory and not just in words, but in actions, very consequential, the most consequential actions, like shutting down the government. That's an amazing transformation.
This is Cable Radio, Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Larry Kleinman. The current struggle over immigration is so heated up now in the national government. The national government is closed now based on that. And people are all over the country are being forced to decide which side are they on and even examine the issue and become much more clear about why, in fact, they are sympathetic to all of those people. And it would be great if we are pointing out that immigrants here are not people who sort of broke the law and want to take advantage of America. They were basically forced out of their country by U.S. policies that so destroyed the agriculture of Mexico, I mean the traditional agriculture, and U.S. policies like in Honduras and El Salvador that led to basically death squad governments. Mm-hmm. People were then welcomed also by industry after industry in the United States who have become dependent on them, mm-hmm. like packing houses and especially farm workers in the harvest, mm-hmm. and others, though, all over.
Construction, service economy, absolutely.
Dishwashers in New York City and everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Home care, home health care.
Nannies, it goes on mm-hmm. and on. In any event,
people are having to think about what this really
yes,
means.
Yes, and that's really important. What about the future? It seems to me the Trump administration is not going to stop, which is why your work is so important. How do we stay in the fight when there's so much pressure and armed men massing outside your door, you think? You're afraid.
The fear of that? Absolutely.
Anxiety yeah. is terrible.
That's ever present. It doesn't matter whether there's a 1 in 50,000 chance or whatever.
Larry, what can be done on a local level and national level by people of goodwill, as they say?
I think support the folks in political office who are holding firm. And around here, that seems to be everybody. Of course, not Greg Walden. He's on the other side. That, I would say, is number one. Number two, this is the resistance coming to fruition. The energy behind this is the energy of resistance. The issues may be this and that. In this case, they're the Dreamers. They're about CHIP program, which is healthcare for poor youth. But the energy behind this bill is about the resistance. And so all of the work that people are doing to run for local office, to make their voices heard, to be part of the pushback and support the local organizations, the local coalition like CAUSA, to me is incredibly valuable, and we need to stay in that work. Even if we aren't sure exactly what we're going to be doing in a month or two, right? But staying in that is going to be critical to turning the tide.
And that means just intensifying support for sanctuary churches, for sanctuary cities in that part of the country. And it means, or in other places, like with your family that lives in who knows where in Michigan, talking to them about why immigrants are here and what we owe them, in fact. I think, in fact, an affirmative struggle, talking about U.S. policy and its impacts and the history of immigration, and to the idea of citizenship for near everybody in this country, that's important.
Yeah, I think the thing we find so difficult right now is that there's not a lot of space to engage with folks. I feel this personally. I have a hard time centering myself to talk to somebody who I know voted for Trump, because part of me thinks, what didn't you understand about what this guy was saying? So either you didn't credit what he was saying, you thought he was just messing around, in which case, why would you vote for that? Or you did credit it, you're part of that too. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, they're obviously, it's complex. I get it. There are people that are just out and out white nationalists. And then there are a lot of other people that are frustrated and are blaming the wrong folks. But how to unpack that right now, I think, is actually really complicated and really difficult. So a lot of the issues you just articulated, which are absolutely right on in terms of the analysis, the space that people have to unpack that and hold those tensions, right? And then think about how you put it back together in a good way is pretty narrow.
It's going to go on for a while, though. People do change over time. Trump is flying high now. Wait till the economy starts going down. In fact, I'm worried about that because when that comes, this sort of unhinged person may react.
Yeah, we're living in unbelievably stressful times. The only analog to me in my lifetime was the election of Richard Nixon, of how we felt about it at the time, not how we think about it now, because he is a much diminished figure by his impeachment or his near impeachment, his resignation and so on. But he was a hyper dangerous person hyper high risk moment and period. That's the only thing that I can think of in my lifetime. I'm going to be 65 this year that even comes close to comparing to the danger of Trump.
Larry, really good talking to you again. Thanks for coming.
Glad to be with you. Glad to come any time, Bill.
Ice, water frozen solid. ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. ICE, El Hielo.
Va pasando el trapo sobre la mesa y está cuidando que todo brille como una perla.
This is KBOO Portland in the Omo Variety Hour. The song was Ice and Hielo, Spanish for frozen water, by Santa Cecilia. But of course it's not about frozen water, but ice as an immigration and customs enforcement. The chorus translates, "We never know when we will be hit. They cry, the children cry in the doorway. They cry when they see their mother will not come back."